Hello, and welcome to the sixth episode of Let's Talk Iran, providing Iranian-American perspectives on current events and policies that shape U.S.-Iranian relations and affect the Iranian-American community. This program is brought to you by the National Iranian-American Council, otherwise known as NIAC. I'm Novar Elmi, and I'll be your host. I'm here today with Melody Moisey. Melody is a commentator, activist, attorney, and author of her award-winning book, War on Error, Real Stories of American Muslims. Melody was able to join us via telephone to discuss the use and misuse of the word terrorism. Thank you, Melody, for being with us today. On July 22nd, Anders Breivik carried out one of the biggest massacres in Norway's history, leaving 77 people dead. And he said he did it all in the name of right-wing extremism and anti-multiculturalism. In light of the media's reluctance to quickly label the attacker as a terrorist, has the term terrorism become politicized in that we only view violent acts by Muslims or those of Middle Eastern descent as terrorism? And if so, what impact does this have?
Well, I think not only the media's reluctance, the reluctance came later. There was also this level of irresponsibility by, in fact, originally some outlets, including the Wall Street Journal, did label him a so-called Islamic Middle Eastern terrorist before the jury was actually in on that one. The same thing happened, I think, at the Gabrielle Giffords shooting. What happens is if it's a white guy who's claiming to be a Christian, everyone understands that this is not the case, that he becomes a crazed madman and everyone's interested in the issues of mental health, for example. I think there are some main fallacies here that the media makes very frequently, and I think the public makes it because the media makes it. One, if somebody is Muslim, therefore they're Middle Eastern. I think we all know that that's not true. The majority of Muslims are actually Asian and African, and there's a good deal of Middle Easterners who are not Muslim. And then that, on top of that, if you're Middle Eastern and, of course, therefore Muslim, then you must be a terrorist. So conflating these things, conflating Islam and Middle Eastern with as well this sense of Islamic extremism that has nothing to do with Islam itself, I think are huge problems that the media engages in very frequently.
And, you know, you brought up a good point. You said that we as a society, you know, we make these fallacies because we see it in the media. So, you know, my next question is, are we now, have you noticed in just the general public, are we beginning to turn a blind eye to other forms of extremism? And is this, in fact, due to the media or other factors?
I think the media is hugely responsible, which is hard for me to say as a part of the media, but I'm trying to sort of fight that. And so definitely, for example, in Europe, the majority of terrorism is actually committed by political groups, anarchist groups, groups that are fighting for independence like ETA. Another good example is the Lord's Resistance Army in Sudan and Uganda, which claims to be, for example, led by a Christian philosophy. First of all, we don't hear about them because the media here never reports on Africa. But if they do, God forbid we ever hear that they're claiming that these actions are supposedly based on Christianity. I've never heard that in the media. But if you learn about the LRA, they actually are claiming this. And obviously it's a false claim. But we never hear it. And when people make the false claim with respect to Islam, we do immediately hear it.
So what is most concerning about the new phobia surrounding Middle Easterners? I mean, where can it lead, and can it affect U.S. policy, for example, or U.S. political culture?
What concerns me most is that it's more than a phobia. It's also the groundwork for illegal discrimination that is strictly prohibited by the 14th Amendment on the basis of religion and national origin. That's what scares me. And of course, this is going to affect U.S. policy, especially U.S. campaigns. If you associate with Middle Easterners, for example, there's immediately the assumption that you have something to do with terrorism. And it really does affect how candidates campaign. And it's because of the way the public perception, or rather misperception, is. So definitely, I think it affects our culture, particularly our political culture.
So has the war on terror been a catalyst for this movement?
I think definitely. I also think, first and foremost, the so-called war on terror has been an absolute disaster. I think Americans are smart enough to see that. And it's turned from a war on, quote, terrorism to a war on the Iraqi and Afghani people. Let's not forget, apart from the thousands of American servicewomen and servicemen who've been lost to these wars, there's also hundreds of thousands of Iraqi and Afghani civilians who've been lost. And that's not something people forget. So it's one thing for this war on terror to move xenophobia and discrimination. It's another thing to be actually killing people, because it creates the opposite effect. It's very counterproductive. I work with the United Nations because I believe 100%, for example, in diplomacy. I believe in what they do. Certainly, we're not always successful. But the idea behind, for example, the United Nations is one I think individual countries need to start adopting.
So do you think that this is just a temporary movement, you know, that perhaps down the line it'll be replaced by another group that'll be the group du jour that people are kind of afraid of or calling out or just discriminating against? Or do you think this is something that is here to stay? You know, is it a broader clash of the civilizations?
Right. I mean, I really can't stand the phrase clash of civilizations because it promotes these unnecessary divisions and false perceptions. But it's important to bring it up because of that very fact and because a lot of people turn to that phrase. But again, in this respect, I think Americans will stop clinging on to this. Clearly, Catholics, Jews, African Americans, Japanese Americans, for example, have been victims and targets of this kind of xenophobia and discrimination. And not that it's perfect now for all of them, but it's definitely much better. I think the targets today are very different, and I think Muslims and Middle Easterners are on the top of the list, as are Hispanics and the LGBT community. And as a result, I think it's very important in the United States, especially for us as Middle Easterners, whether we be Muslim or not, quite honestly, to unite with these different groups, especially, as I say, Hispanics and the LGBT community, because we can achieve so much together that we can't achieve alone.
Unfortunately, we're running out of time, so I just have one last question for you. But, you know, here at Let's Talk Iran, we like to provide the Iranian-American perspective, right? So how can the Iranian-American community combat this movement? I mean, what are the steps that we can take to push back against the misconceptions that are being perpetuated?
I think, first of all, we can stop changing our names. It's sort of, it's a pet peeve of mine. Actually, people ask me frequently, oh, is Melody your real name? And it is. And I tell them they use the word in Iran. It means the same thing. But quite honestly, I mean, if your name is Patisaw, it's Patisaw. It's not Paris. Like, I'm not going to call you Paris. And if you're going to force me to call you Paris, then I'm out, you know? If your name is Babak, it's not Robert. You know, I think changing your name is symbolic of trying to pass as something that you are not. And symbolic is a certain level of shame. And it really bothers me. And there's also the perception that we are able to be doctors and lawyers and engineers, and beyond that, forget it. I think it's very important to have journalists, artists, politicians, writers, and entrepreneurs in our ranks. And more than anything, I think it's important that we stop fighting amongst ourselves and start uniting. It's one thing to unite with the Hispanic and LGBT community. We're not going to be able to do that and achieve as much as that will actually achieve unless we start uniting amongst ourselves and stop with these ridiculous conspiracy theories, I think.
Melody, thank you so much for your time. I really enjoyed speaking with you, and we hope to revisit with you again someday soon.
Likewise. Thank you.
To read more about Melody and her work, visit www.melodymoezi.com. That's MelodyMoezzi.com. And as always, please be sure to visit NIAC at www.niacouncil.org.